intensivecarehotline.com, and I want to welcome you to the live stream today. I can see that there's some people here already. I want to welcome you to this live stream, and today I want to talk about the pros and cons of a tracheostomy in intensive care. So let's dive right into it, because I'm sure that's what you want to know while you're here on this live stream. If you have any questions, please type them into the chat pad, and we can get on to those questions. But let me just start, about the topic in particular again, the pros and cons of a tracheostomy in intensive care. So a lot of families come to us here at intensivecarehotline.com, and they want to ask, well, should we be consenting to a tracheostomy in intensive care, or should we not be consenting to a tracheostomy in intensive care? Now, let's quickly look at the answer to that question. And the answer to that question really is, you should consent to a tracheostomy in intensive care if the intensive care team has done everything beyond the shadow of a doubt to get your loved one off the ventilator with a breathing tube and an endotracheal tube. And, you know, if your loved one has a breathing tube or an endotracheal tube in their throat, that's very uncomfortable. They need to be in an induced coma. And waking up after that induced coma has its challenges, and that's often when people fail to be weaned off the ventilator. But, you know, there's so many things that can be done to wean someone off the ventilator and the breathing tube before a tracheostomy needs to be considered. For example, sometimes sedation needs to be changed. Sometimes ventilation settings need to be changed. Sometimes physical therapy or physiotherapy needs to be started before you can remove the breathing tube. But the advantages of avoiding a tracheostomy overall by far outweigh the disadvantages if, and here's the big if the breathing tube can be taken out within a time frame sort of a 10 to 14 day mark. And why is that? If you leave the breathing tube in for more than 14 days, 10 to 14 days, one of the biggest challenges is that patients need to stay in an induced coma because the breathing tube is so uncomfortable. When the breathing tube stays in for more than 14 days and your loved one stays in an induced coma for more than 14 days, challenge is that they decondition quickly. They decondition very quickly, and then it gets even harder to be weaned off the ventilator because they're deconditioned, the induced coma weakens them. You know, they're wasting their muscles very quickly. And that's why it's then getting even more difficult to wean someone off the ventilator. Whereas if you then move to a tracheostomy after 10 to 14 days, you can usually switch off the sedation pretty quickly. You can get patients out of an induced coma fairly quickly, and that helps them to then regain their strength, regain their muscles, and breathe by themselves, because the tracheostomy overall is not painful. Overall, a tracheostomy, patients don't report any pain, which means they can be taken out of the induced coma, and that's when they can have more physical therapy, they can get mobilized easier, and it helps them to be weaned off the ventilator once they have a tracheostomy. Also, a tracheostomy is more or less buying a critically ill patient time to be weaned off the ventilator. Whereas, as I explained before, when someone is on a breathing tube, there is a limited time window when they can be weaned off the ventilator. And if they can't be weaned off the ventilator within that 10 to 14 day window, after that, staying on a breathing tube and an endotracheal tube is defeating its purpose. It's defeating its purpose. And that's why you then have to move to a tracheostomy eventually. Now, for some of you that are listening to this, especially if you've been struck or if your loved one has been struck with COVID and is in ICU with ARDS, what we're definitely seeing at the moment with the, obviously with the spread of COVID and then patients ending up in intensive care with ARDS or lung failure, is clearly that there are delays with tracheostomies. Why are there delays? Quite simple. A tracheostomy is a surgical procedure. When they cut the hole in the trachea to perform the tracheostomy, the lungs are open, even though it's only for a short period of time. Obviously, the COVID is sitting in the lungs. The lungs are open. The spread of COVID is real, which means it's a big risk for hospital staff, whether it's the doctors, the nurses. So the risk of hospital staff contracting COVID by doing a tracheostomy is real. And that is why there are often delays now to see whether the COVID can go away. And then once patients are COVID negative, it's easier to do a tracheostomy. Having said all of that, that doesn't help a patient again, because, you know, once the 10 to 14 day time window has been more or less gone, to wean someone off the ventilator with a breathing tube, a patient deteriorates often even further. So that's why, you know, the 10 to 14 day time window is so critical. And that's why COVID really has made things worse, especially for COVID patients specifically. And we're certainly seeing across the board that the deconditioning of COVID patients seems to be fairly rapid. And not that I want to talk about COVID now, but I just want to quickly mention that. And especially since a lot of COVID patients with ARDS or lung failure are being prone, they go into prone position, and they're often then in an even deeper induced coma. They need more sedation, more opiates, and they often also need muscle relaxants to be paralyzed to tolerate the proning. And the combination of all of that, delays tracheostomies even further. It weakens patients even further. They're deconditioning even quicker. And it's a whole vicious cycle that's starting there. So the COVID is definitely a terrible, terrible thing that happened for everyone, but specifically for patients that end up in ICU, that go through the proning, go through the induced comas and paralyzing. But let's just quickly look now in more detail about the pros and cons of the tracheostomy in intensive care. Let's just quickly start with the pros. The pros are you can stop the induced coma most of the time and patients can wake up. You can assess them neurologically, because if someone is not waking up after an induced coma, especially if they still have a breathing tube in, well, the questions are they, have they had a neurological event? Have they had a stroke? Have they had a brain bleed? Have they had maybe underlying seizures and so forth? So once the tracheostomy is done, when someone can't come off the ventilator, it's so much easier to assess someone neurologically, because, you know, you can switch off sedation and you can see people waking up or not. That is definitely one advantage. The next advantage is, it's easier to tolerate. So you would have seen your loved one with a breathing tube or an endotracheal tube coughing. It's very uncomfortable. You know, they often, if they are awake, they're pointing to the tube and they want to have it out. And that's all understandable. So once a tracheostomy has been done, you know, it's easier to tolerate. Most people with a tracheostomy don't report any pain. They don't report any discomfort. There is some discomfort as well with the tracheostomy. It's mainly around, you know, when you change the dressing, when you change the tape, when you change the inner cannula, that people start coughing. That is definitely a disadvantage and it's definitely uncomfortable. The other disadvantage is that when you suction, you know, again, people start coughing, but that is the same on the breathing tube and it's less comfortable. it's more comfortable on the breathing tube compared to the tracheostomy. If there are any questions while I'm talking, type them in and we can and I can answer those questions you know, once I've gone through the pros and cons. So please type in your questions. So the next benefit of a tracheostomy is that you can mobilize easier and quicker. So why is that? So let's just say you're mobilizing someone. And when I say mobilization, I mean getting somebody out of the intensive care bed, getting them in a recliner chair. And there's special chairs in ICU where you can mobilize a person. There's a high risk of mobilizing someone with a breathing tube or an endotracheal tube if the tube comes out during mobilization. And that can happen. It can be life-threatening and can be very difficult to re-intubate a patient while they are being mobilized. Again, that can be a life-threatening situation. With a tracheostomy, for example, if, God forbid, a tracheostomy comes out or gets dislodged, it's so much easier to deal with that. It's just putting in a new cannula. You don't need to intubate someone. You know, it's so much easier to deal with it. So that is definitely another advantage. The next advantage is suctioning. So when you have someone with a breathing tube, you have a very long breathing tube and you need to suction, okay? And you need to suction regularly to clear the airway because patients are not in a position to clear their own secretions while they're on a ventilator with a breathing tube. So when you suction someone with a breathing tube, you need a long suction catheter. It's very uncomfortable. Patients report that they're feeling like they're suffocating, they're coughing. Again, the risk of the breathing tube getting dislodged, coming out, is fairly high. And again, that is a life-threatening issue. So then, if you are having a tracheostomy and you need suction, you need a shorter suction catheter, it's much easier to control. You can also change with the tracheostomy. You often have an inner cannula. Not all tracheostomies have an inner cannula, but most tracheostomies have an inner cannula. And it's actually much easier for you to make an assessment how many secretions are there. If you have an inner cannula, you can have a look, you know, is the tube blocked or is it close of being blocked? You know, it's almost like a safety valve if you're having an inner cannula to check for airway patency. And that is very difficult to assess with a breathing tube. Now just give me one sec. I just need to get rid of the lump in my throat. The next advantage of having a tracheostomy is clearly this, and this is probably one of the major ones. So when someone is on a breathing tube, and because the breathing tube is so long, right, and people need to be in an induced coma, it's very difficult to do breathing trials, especially if people can't tolerate the breathing tube. So when someone is doing a breathing trial on a breathing tube and they can't tolerate the breathing tube, all they do is they cough, they get very agitated because it's so uncomfortable, and it's very difficult to do a spontaneous breathing trial. Whereas with the tracheostomy, it's very easy doing a spontaneous breathing trial. So when you do a spontaneous breathing trial on a tracheostomy, you can pretty much just remove the ventilator. You know, patients are more awake, generally speaking, and you can put them on some humidified oxygen. It's also known as a trach collar. Or you can put them on a Swedish nose, on an HME filter, and you can see fairly quickly, can someone tolerate breathing spontaneously? And I can tell you, even if it's only 10 minutes in the beginning, if someone has been on a ventilator for 2 for 3 weeks and they can only breathe spontaneously in the first 10 minutes, well, that's a start. That's 10 minutes more than the 3 weeks before. So you got to look at the little wins in those situations. And it's just so much easier to do breathing treatments. Also, it's so much easier with the tracheostomy to do things like nebulization, right? A normal saline nebulizer Ventolin nebulizer, Atrovent nebulizer, Pulmicort nebulizer, it's just so much easier to apply those breathing treatments that often help a critically ill patient to get off the ventilator. So that is definitely another big advantage. Here's another advantage. When someone, let's just say they're having a size 8 breathing tube, you know, there's different sizes, different size breathing tubes, different size tracheostomy tubes. Okay, let's just say someone is having a size 8 breathing tube. They're now ending up with a size 8 tracheostomy, right? And you can also then start downsizing the tracheostomy, maybe go from a size 8 to a size 7. And again, that helps in the process of weaning off the ventilator. You can't do that with a breathing tube. It's too complex, too complicated. The risk of changing breathing tubes to different sizes is too high. Whereas with the tracheostomy, it can be done very easily. Okay, so that's another advantage. Next advantage with the tracheostomy is that if someone has time off the ventilator, they can also be trialed of starting to talk again. Even though the vocal cords are generally speaking paralyzed, you can then start using a speaking valve. Okay, and again, that often doesn't happen day one, but you know, again, speech therapists can start training someone on a tracheostomy to start talking. So that's another major advantage. Another advantage is that if someone has time off the ventilator and is not at risk of aspiration, you can also take down the balloon or the cuff of the tracheostomy tube. And you can see, can someone cough up their secretions? You know, very difficult to do that with a breathing tube, okay? So that's another advantage. Coming back to what I believe is one of the biggest disadvantages, especially for our viewers in the United States, and you might wonder what has a tracheostomy to do whether you're in a different country. Well, I will elaborate on that in a minute. So for our viewers in the United States, one of the biggest disadvantages of having a tracheostomy is that the ICUs often want to send your loved one to LTAC, and LTAC stands for long-term acute care facility. Now, that generally speaking doesn't happen in other English-speaking countries like in the UK, Ireland, Australia, New Zealand. People after tracheostomy stay in intensive care, and from my experience, that's where they should be. There is another alternative, intensive care at home, but I'll come to that a bit later. I just want to explain to you about the disadvantage about LTAC first. So a critically ill patient in intensive care ends up with a tracheostomy because they can't be weaned off the ventilator. And then ICUs in America want to send them to LTAC. And that is a disaster waiting to happen, right? LTACs are designed to save money. They're not designed for clinical need. Now, when someone is critically ill in intensive care and they're needing a tracheostomy for all the reasons that we just mentioned a minute ago, going to LTAC is an absolute disaster. It's like staring into the abyss. Why is that? As you probably know, for our viewers in the US, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, they're paying 60, sometimes 90 days of ICU, and then people got to move on irrespective of their clinical condition. And that's where LTAC comes in. Again, not designed for clinical need, it's designed to save money. Then patients with a critical illness end up in LTAC. Now, picture this, you're going from ICU where you have ICU doctors, ICU nurses, respiratory therapists, physical therapists, the whole lot. And then you're going to LTAC, that's designed to save money, and then you have one nurse looking after 10 patients that's not critical care trained. You have one doctor overseeing 30 patients all on ventilation with tracheostomy. It's a disaster waiting to happen. It's a tragedy. It still beggars belief to me that somebody has invented LTAC in the United States to save money, and a lot of patients die in LTAC. Unfortunately, a lot of families come to us here at intensivecarehotline.com and they ask us, oh, can you help me get my loved one out of LTAC, because this is not what we expected. And we know why. You know, I can see why this is such a terrible tragedy going to LTAC. You know, when someone is critically ill, the last thing you want is disrupting a care episode. Now, when you look at LTAC, it's clearly disrupting a care episode in intensive care. We're talking about disrupting a care episode for some of the most vulnerable people in a hospital. That is beyond belief from my perspective. On top of that, many LTACs, depending on your location, many LTACs want to send your loved ones hours away, potentially to another state, because LTACs are not necessarily readily available in your location, right? We have dealt with families that, you know, have been asked to send their loved ones from Los Angeles to San Francisco to an LTAC. We have been dealing with families in Florida that had their loved ones, that where the hospitals wanted to send their loved ones to Georgia to an LTAC, hours away from their family. It's beyond belief. It's beyond belief, right, what's happening there. The system is flawed. And Alex, Amy, you're just saying that, you know, you try your best to keep your dad in ICU. And, you know, again, you should be trying to keep your dad in ICU. You should be trying to avoid a tracheostomy in the first place. And you definitely should be trying to avoid LTAC if your dad, for whatever reason, does need a tracheostomy. So that's my advice there. So coming back to, you know, the disadvantages here is the LTAC clearly. And again, from my experience, we have helped many families through our consulting and advocacy to keep their loved ones in ICU when they were on the brink of discharge to LTAC, because, you know, we are clinicians ourselves, and we can advocate for your loved one and say, look, these are the reasons why this particular patient needs to stay in ICU. We know that, you know, LTAC is just a disaster area. And if you look at the reviews for many LTAC facilities, if you look up the Google reviews, most reviews are pretty negative, whereas the hospital is trying to tell you that LTACs are specialized in weaning patients off ventilation, and nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing could be further from the truth. So it's a very unfortunate situation for many patients that go into LTAC and are stuck there for many weeks. And hence, the other disadvantage on that note is that, think about this, your loved one is critically ill, is going to LTAC in a very vulnerable state. Chances for something to go wrong are pretty high. Chances that your loved one is bouncing back into ICU is high, okay? And that's another disruption of a care episode. And there's no guarantee that, A, the LTAC has an ICU attached to the hospital or to their facility. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they do. Or, B, that the ICU where your loved one came from still has a bed available. So that often, what that looks like in reality often is, your loved one is going to LTAC, they need ICU again, and your loved one then goes back to another ICU. Basically, in that vulnerable state, they end up in three hospitals. That is ridiculous. No, and it's not conducive to recovery for a very vulnerable patient in that situation. So the other disadvantage of a tracheostomy is clearly that, you know, it's a procedure, it's a surgical procedure. There's risks attached with a surgical procedure, right? Infection risk, you know, bleeding risk. There's definitely risks attached to that. Having said that, from my experience, you know, most tracheostomies that are done are, you know, it's a smooth process. But again, like with any procedure, there is definitely a risk attached with that. And again, I keep coming back to why that you should only consent to a tracheostomy if the ICU team has done everything beyond the shadow of a doubt to get your loved one off the ventilator and the breathing tube in the first place. Now, and that is sort of, I can't elaborate in this call on what that is, what boxes need to be ticked. So when that the ICU has done everything beyond the shadow of a doubt to get your loved one off the ventilator, I will do that in another live video, maybe next week, where I will focus on that specific topic, okay? But the bottom line is this, you know, you need to know what to look for, because your biggest challenge is that you don't know what you don't know. your biggest challenge is that you don't know what to look for, you don't know what questions to ask, you don't know your rights, and you don't know how to manage the doctors and nurses in intensive care. That's one part of your challenge in those situations. So another disadvantage when it comes to the tracheostomy is that it generally speaking prolongs hospital stays, generally speaking. Okay, so picture this. You have your loved one on a breathing tube, on a ventilator, and you can take that tube out and recovery goes well. Well, that trajectory is hopefully straightforward. Okay, yes, it might include some rehabilitation, but that process should be more straightforward compared to having a tracheostomy, having a prolonged ICU stay, potentially going to LTAC, potentially needing services like intensive care at home, right? The trajectory of recovery from A, having the breathing tube removed, or B, having a tracheostomy is like day and night. There can't be more contrast than that. You know, your loved one should be able to leave intensive care much quicker and go to a hospital floor or a hospital ward if they have the breathing tube removed, as opposed to having a tracheostomy because they need more time to be weaned off the ventilator. So, you know, whenever you can have that breathing tube removed, you should be going for that. The only time you shouldn't have the breathing tube removed is when ICU teams talk about, oh, we're doing a quote-unquote one-way extubation. What does a one-way extubation mean? A one-way extubation means we're going to take the breathing tube out. If your loved one can breathe and maintain their own airway and survive, that's great. If they can't breathe, if they can't maintain their own airway, when we do that quote-unquote one-way extubation, bad luck. It's basically a sink or swim approach, and you certainly don't want to have your loved one approaching a sink or swim approach whenever that can be avoided, because that's basically a life or death situation with no backup plan, right? If the ICU team wants to do a trial extubation and is offering the tracheostomy on the other end, that's fair enough from my perspective. I do believe that a trial extubation should be done, right? I do believe in that. But if that fails, a tracheostomy definitely needs to be offered on the other end to avoid that quote-unquote sink and swim approach. Yeah, that's where I sort of want to sort of slowly come to an end here in terms of, you know, the pros and cons of the tracheostomy. Just very quickly, another alternative obviously is, depending on how much research you've done, let's just say your loved one can't come off the ventilator with a tracheostomy and is either stuck in ICU or in LTAC. Another alternative for that is definitely intensive care at home. You know, intensive care at home offers services, 24-hour services at home with critical care trained nurses for long-term ventilated patients with tracheostomy. And you should be checking out intensivecareathome.com for more information there. But that is definitely a genuine alternative for long-term ventilated patients with tracheostomy. But again, that is more that if everything that we spoke about so far is failing, you know, I hope I've given you enough strategies now that you don't need to be in a position where you need intensive care at home for your loved one. But it's also important for you to know that it's there on the other end. Again, you can check out intensivecareathome.com. Now, for our viewers that are still here, did you have any other questions? Please type them into the chat pad and I would love to answer them if you have any questions. Alternatively, you can email me at support@intensivecarehotline.com. You can email me your questions there. You can also call me on US 415-915-0090. That is, again, if you're in the US, you dial 415-915-0090. If you are in the UK, you dial 0118-324-3018. That is, again, for our viewers in the UK, you can call me on 0118 324 3018. And for our viewers in Australia, you can call me on 041 094 2230. That is again for our viewers in Australia, you can call me on 041 094 2230. So if there are no other questions, I'll leave it there. I do see that Amy, if you want to email me later, you're welcome to do so. Again, you can email me at support@intensivecarehotline.com. I will probably do another live call next week and want to talk about, you know, what I mentioned before. What does the ICU team need to do to get your loved one off the breathing tube in the first place? So, you know, like I alluded to, the ICU team needs to do everything beyond the shadow of a doubt to get your loved one off the breathing tube and the endotracheal tube in the first place to avoid the tracheostomy. And I want to hone in on that next week. And again, thank you for all of you that have come on to this call, Amy, Philin, and others. And looking forward to your phone calls and email. Take care for now, and I wish you and your families all the best.